Clayton. John Clayton.
Hey, Mom! I'm done with my segment!
This is the Coors Light Cold Hard Facts with John Clayton.
Brought to you by Coors Light. Made to chill.
It's time to talk football with the professor. John, how you doing today?
Good, Dave. How are you? Where's Bob?
I'm doing great. Bob is on a vacation. He's vacationing
for him.
Bob Stilton.
How about that?
That's what I said. Yeah, Jim thought it was irresponsible of him.
What are those things, vacations?
You wouldn't know because you never take one.
I never take one.
Professor, you need to take one. This is the off-season for the NFL.
It was an off-season yesterday on Sunday night. My God, the news on Sunday night was amazing. You know, we had the Cam Newton deal going to New England. We had the Patriots getting their slap on the wrist with the third round draft choice and $1.1 million for doing the Cincinnati sideline taping. And then we had the news that Johnny Manziel is figuring he's not going to ever get back in football again.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you, a Cam Newton thing, very interesting to me, John. Can't wait to hear your thoughts on him. But the whole thing with the illegal sideline filming, and you're like me. You know people around the league. You know a lot more probably, but you just hear things always about the Patriots. And, you know, and sometimes it's kind of a conspiracy theory, but then sometimes when you talk to people that have been in the league for a long time, whether they're, you know, GMs or coaches or whatever, and there's always just something a little bit off. There's always something fishy about what the Patriots are doing. Remind us again what exactly this whole sideline. Weren't they in Cincinnati?
They were in Cincinnati.
And
they were in the press. They're in the press box with the film crew. And so what they did is that they're allegedly doing a documentary on one of the advanced scouts. Okay, one of the guy that's there. Mm-hmm. You know, and so all of a sudden, they keep on shooting the coaches on the sidelines, you know, who are calling in plays and, you know, motioning plays and stuff like that. And that's all they showed. I mean, you didn't see any look of the, this advanced scout and what he was doing. And so, you know, advanced scouts, you know, they look at the sidelines too to see if they can pick up any signals. I know, defensive coordinators I sat next to in the press box, and, you know, they're always looking like that because it's such a natural thing to see if you can pick up something. But, you know, here they were getting this on tape. Now, again, what didn't make any sense, it's not like they were doing this before a game. I mean, this was happening during the game, and they don't know the next time they're going to play the Bengals, but they know the Bengals weren't going to make the playoffs, so it wouldn't be a playoff run. And they also knew that, who knows if they're going to play the next year. But they were doing all that taping, and so one of the PR guys came over and said, what are you doing? And then they kind of got a little afraid, and it says, oh, well, we're just taping for the documentary. It's like, yeah, but you don't seem to be doing anything but looking at our sidelines.
Right.
And so it's like, okay, well, we'll take the tape and destroy it. They said, no, you won't. And that created the problem. Now, again, there was no true linkage they could get to Bill Belichick or anybody in the scouting department or anything of that nature. But my read on it, what they were probably trying to do was, you know, take a new coach like Zach Taylor, who comes from, you know, the Rams system, and Sean McVay, you know, seeing how they call games and what their signals are so they could stockpile it for the future. But again, there's no technical linking with the head coaches. But again, you know, that now costs them a third round pick and $1.1 million. And obviously, I thought it was even going to be a little bit less because it wasn't a major thing. It wasn't directly involved in the game like Spygate or Deflategate or anything else. But the fact that the Patriots have a past, you know, they had to pay for the present.
Yeah, so they were, like you said, they were advanced scouting. Mm-hmm. And it was for the Bengals was this last year when they were terrible?
Yeah.
So, I mean, it just makes you wonder why they would do that. And then the other thing, and this is where the whole Spygate with, I think it was the Jets, where it's okay to send a scout there and for him, you know, and even on the sidelines and during the game to try to pick up on things. It's just not cool when you film it, especially under that really kind of hokey pretense that we're doing a documentary on an advanced scout. Yeah, mm-hmm. It just seems very fishy. Now, do I think this is the reason why the Patriots have won all these games? No, I do not. But it does just seem like there is a lot of things that are going on that are a little bit fishy. So it cost them $1 million, no big deal there. But the third-round draft pick is a pretty big hit.
Well, yeah, and think about just the history of all this. And I know that you know, Chris Mortensen and a bunch of us national guys years ago had somebody who used to work in the Patriots front office called and told us the whole story on Spygate. And the story basically was that you had, you know, the guy filming on the sidelines, right, trying to get all the signals. They would get it to a couple coaches who would be waiting for him as you would exit in toward the locker room. They then would go and take it as fast as they can to pick up all the signals and then get it to the coaching booth so they can get it down to Tom Brady. And if it was a home game, they had the ability to get past the 15-second thing in the helmet of the quarterback, Tom Brady. So then, you know, Bevo Wright or something like that, and it would tick date, okay, here's the call coming in on this one. It's going to be this type of blitz coming from the right side. And so that gave Tom the ability to make an adjustment as far as the blocking scheme and also to be able to do it. But, you know, they would have people that would go to team hotels and see if they can dig into trash cans to see if there was, you know, any playbooks and play stuff and that was left there. You know, they would try to find ways to be able to shoot into practices. I mean, they had so many different ways of doing it that, you know, they had all this research to be able to get it done. So that cost them a first and a fourth round pick. Then you had the deflated footballs with Tom Brady. He gets suspended 4 games and they lose a first round pick. Now you have the third round pick. So somehow since, 2006, you know, they've lost 2 first rounders, a third and a fourth, and yet they still win.
So, John, this begs the question, are the Patriots the Astros or the Astros the Patriots?
They're equal. Totally the same. They are the equals. Yeah, because, again, you can see that there's this long history of doing things. Like, for example, when they were being investigated for Spygate, they were actually doing the Deflategate. And, again, it seems like a minor thing. It's like, oh, yeah, why would they deflate the footballs? But it gave the running backs, and it also gave Tom Brady a better grip on the ball, you know, because he's got big hands. And, of course, particularly in the colder weather games, that's an advantage for him. But, you know, so but he had to pay the 4 games. And so, yeah, I think that, you know, I don't know if they've gone to school together for this, but maybe they did.
John, what about Cam Newton going to New England? Does that elevate the Patriots where they could possibly contend with Kansas City and Baltimore?
No, I don't think it does that, but I think it puts them in a position where, you know, they're the equal of Buffalo in the division, because I think there's still a big gap, because, you know, Patrick Mahomes right now with 20 of the 22 starters coming back, you know, that's the I still think they're the top team in the AFC, but it certainly now, you know, diminishes the idea that Buffalo is the best team in the AFC East. You know, here's Buffalo, a team that, you know, gives up, you know, 17, 18 points a game, but they only score 17, but they've upgraded their receiving core and their roster. But now by adding Newton, if he ends up starting, you know, he can come back and you know, put some points on the board. And, you know, particularly going against so many young quarterbacks, he's going to have such an edge. And also, it's going to make them so different from what you've seen in the past. And you'll see it in Week 2 on the Sunday night game, because, you know, Stidham was going to be a pocket passing quarterback. But now for the first time, you know, they've got a running quarterback in a running league. And now they're going to be that much more hard to figure out what they're going to do.
If you have any questions, text them into the Vizzy Hard Seltzer line, 710-710. I'm perplexed by Richard Sherman's response, John, to Cam Chancellor signing this contract. And I'm not sure what if he's mad at Cam Newton or he's just mad at the league. I find that a lot of times Richard Sherman shouts at the wind because he's disgusted that he had to sign for the league minimum. Well, that was the market for him. I mean, does he think he should have held out and tried to get more and maybe wait for a starting job, or which he is going to have a chance to start here? I'm not sure what he means by that, because I'm not on Twitter, John.
Yeah,
I don't know if you know that.
I'm
not on Twitter. But he said it was disgusting.
But Dave, how's that TV set in the – I guess you know. Sorry about that.
Oh, John, I'm at home. I have a TV set.
Okay, that's good.
Yeah, so I'm afraid, though, if I turn it on, Salk will come to my house and turn it off, but and unplug the cables. But anyways.
No, actually, Vern can do that. Vern and Paul can do that remotely.
Oh. So anyway, what do you think Sherm meant there?
I'm wondering if he's thinking there's a little bit of a racial thing. Again, I don't want to overdo it because, again, you know, you want to get the best money possible. And, you know, for what's amazing to think is Cam Newton actually got less than Jameis Winston, you know, because Jameis Winston, got a little close to, you know, 11 $11 million, and you know, here's or one, and it's like one was it just a $1.1 million, and then it's a little bit more, I guess, for Cam Newton. But again, it's sad to see that, and again, I guess Cam credit, because you know he wants to go and do the best he can in New England. But then you look around and you say, now wait a second here, Marcus Mariota got $8.8 million, Nick Foles got $8 million, Case Keenum got $6 million, and Cam Newton, who is clearly better than any of those guys, ends up getting minimum salary. So it seems to be a silly system like that, but also understanding that, you know, Cam takes this deal at his own risk, both for economics and also the fact that what happens if the team elects to fail him on the physical when he shows up at training camp. Because remember, he's not taking a physical, and the deal doesn't go in until he gets the physical, and not one is going to be scheduled with the physicians not being able to do it. But I think that, you know, to have Winston and Cam take such low money, it does seem crazy, but again, that's what the deal is, and Cam seems to be okay with it.
All right, Professor, with Cam Newton signing that deal with New England, Dan Orlovsky from ESPN was talking about Colin Kaepernick, and he says the top three teams landing spots for Colin Kaepernick, in his opinion anyway, Tennessee, Pittsburgh, or Seattle. You see either of those three teams happening?
No. I think the situation's dead in Seattle. And plus, they've got their quarterback. They've got Geno Smith, and they got Alex Gordon as the developmental type quarterback. Pittsburgh's not going to do it. I mean, you know, they're going to go with Mason Rudolph. And Tennessee, there's maybe an outside chance. I do think the odds now with Newton getting signed of Kaepernick getting something has a better chance. But also, what deal is he going to take? Is he going to be willing to take the minimum? Because if Newton and Winston has to take that low of a figure, you know, there's not going to be a dime more for Colin Kaepernick. And I don't know if he's willing to do it that way.
We're talking to the professor, and if you have any questions for John, text him in, 710-710, the Vizzy Hard Seltzer line. John, somebody asked a question about Pittsburgh and whether they missed an opportunity with Cam Newton, but what's going on with Big Ben? Last we heard, sounded like he's working out and he's doing okay.
Ben's doing great.
What do we hear?
Yeah, Ben's doing great. Yeah. Everything seems to be extremely positive. He's got an extra zip on the football. I think he's through this and he should be fine. But, you know, the idea is, and again, this is where you have to kind of monitor what you do, because if you get in too strong of a quarterback as a backup, then you can have internal problems, because, young players that grew up fans of Kaepernick, or young players that grew up fans of Cam Newton, you know, if you're a player and you grew up those fans, and if you have Russell Wilson with a bad day or Ben Roethlisberger with a bad day, you know, you say, you know, I think I'd rather see the other quarterback. And you watched the problems in the locker room here in Seattle a couple years ago with some of the defensive players not being in the total corner of Russell Wilson. You just don't need that. And that's why it was much better to get something done with Geno Smith, even though he's not the equal of Kaepernick or not the equal of Cam Newton. And in the case of Cam Newton, okay, yeah, he's going to want to be a starter. Well, guess what? In New England, now he has a chance to be a starter. In Seattle, he doesn't. And that's the reason that they didn't do anything with Cam and Kaepernick back years ago in 2017, because the idea was, hey, wait a second, you know, we talked to you and we think you want to be a starting quarterback. Well, you should, but not, you know, if you're a backup here, you're not going to play.
John, do we have a situation perhaps here to be a little concerned about? You've got the NFLPA director, when asked by USA Today about Russell Wilson and Tom Brady continuing to host the private workouts, and that's against the advice of the NFLPA doctor. Apparently, he said, quote, "There are not in the best interest of protecting our players heading into training camp, and I don't think they're in the best interest of us getting through an entire season." Strong words there.
Yeah, and I think it's the right words, because, I mean, just go what happened in San Francisco more than a week ago, is that you had 17 49er players training in Nashville, Tennessee. You know, three quarterbacks and 14 other offensive players. All right, from that workout that was happening, you've got Deebo Samuel getting a Jones fracture and is going to be out 3 to 4 months. Then you have the injury with Richie James, their kick returner, wide receiver. You know, he breaks his wrist, so he's out 2 months. And then you had one of the players test positive. And this is what the Players Association is concerned about, is that one of the players tested positive of the 17 for the virus. And we still don't have any idea if any of the other players were affected. But, you know, think about what we've just witnessed. You know, we're in the you'll be seeing this week, you know, in baseball. You know, the numbers of players that are going to test is going to be a little bit scary. And it's going to be realistic. Like, for example, in the NBA, you know, you had 16 players test positive out of 302. That's 5.3. That's not a bad number under the percentages. Then today, the NHL had 250 tests, and there were 15 positives. Okay, that's still around that 5 and 6%. If you're doing 5 and 6% of 3,000 players, you know, you're talking 150 to 180 players that are going to test positive. And so now, if you're the Players Association, you with no tests that are going to be there in these high school workouts, that it's like it's too dangerous to be able to do it. So I applaud the Players Association. And again, I'm not as, you know, it's not as bad with DK Metcalf and Russell Wilson because you've got your distancing. You only have two. But when you have, you know, 12, 17 players, I think it is too dangerous.
John, what do you think about Dan Patrick and his report that he has a source telling him that the NFL is planning on delaying the season, but they don't want to come out with that just yet? You think that's a possibility?
It's a possibility, but I don't buy it. I think everything shows you that they're planning to do it, and we've seen this so far every step of the way. You had a certain amount of people that wanted to delay the start of free agency. They didn't, and it worked out. They had a bunch of players that where they had the draft, they wanted to delay that. They had the draft, and it came out virtually perfect. All right, so that worked out. And now the plan is, and it's reemphasized in the last week, that start training camp, you know, between the 25th and the 29th of July. You have some of the selected rookies and quarterbacks coming in maybe 6-7 days early, and then you try to do it like that. Because, you know, if you delay it, and then you're going to bump up against the second wave when it hits in the fall, and that can make matters worse. Get in as much as you can. I mean, you know, again, if you're going to have 5 and 6% positive tests and you realize you're going to have 150 or so players, you know, going through it, you want to get through it as fast as possible and then try to get, not, you're not going to be normal, but I don't agree that there's the thought that they're going to, you know, purposely move things back, because move it back when you have to move it back.
Yeah. Didn't we heard from Andrew Brandt that I guess Von Miller got pretty sick, but he had asthma. Is that right?
That's correct. Yeah.
I think. Yeah. So, yeah, if you have any, and there's a pretty good amount of, you know, players with sleep apnea and things like that. So that also puts them at risk. So,
well, you know,
yeah,
they also, I mean, the Players Association sent a letter to the agents today and said that you better watch your players, because then they showed 20 different pre-existing things that could affect on the virus. And it's like, if your player has any of these, you've got to try to protect him a little bit and not let him go to these individual workouts that shouldn't happen.
Yeah, and I wonder if there's going to be, like, legal issues too, John, and possibly opt-outs. We were just talking about that with baseball. And, you know, obviously the older guys who have made a lot of money, you know, they are in a much better position to just opt out. But in the NFL, tell us how that would work as opposed to what's going on with the Major League Baseball.
My guess is if you opt out, then you'll go on a reserve retired list, and you won't get paid, and you won't get a year toward free agency if you're going toward free agency. Now, again, if you're an older player, that doesn't mean too much, but you're certainly not going to get paid if you don't play or don't play. And, again, that's going to be the individual decision. So far we've seen three baseball players, including Mike Leake and Ryan Zimmerman, Joe Ross, a pitcher. You know, those three have opted not to go in, but I'm sure there's going to be some that won't go in, but it's not going to be like Mike Leake, who at least, you know, with the baseball rules that they have, you know, he still doesn't have to worry about getting that year in toward free agency. He just becomes a free agent next year.
John, sad news in the NFL today. Joe Bugle dying at the age of 80. I remember Bugle being the head coach with the Cardinals, but I guess he's better known for creating the Hogs, the lovably known offensive lineman there in Washington.
Yeah, and of course, I mean, I'm so saddened by this, because he grew up in Homestead, PA. You know, I grew up in Braddock, PA, and, you know, Braddock, PA was the worst ghetto in the state of Pennsylvania. Homestead was right across the river. And, you know, that I always said to Joe and all that stuff, every time you flushed your commode, it came up to my place. Because, again, they were up on a hill and all that stuff. And so Joe was such a great guy, a great human being, and a great coach. And, you know, he got the Hogs together. He did a good job with the Arizona Cardinals. And he's just one of the great, you know, offensive line coaches maybe in NFL history.
John, I think the last time you told that story, you used less appropriate wording. Mm-hmm. And it was really funny. But I do believe we had to dump it. But
oh, okay. Sorry about that.
It wasn't flushing his commode.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Did I say toilet?
No. I won't say what you said. All right. George Kittle is looking to be the highest paid tight end. Do you think he can garner $17 million a year from the 570?
No, I don't think he can. Yeah, because, you know, the problem is there's only been three guys from that 2017 draft that have been able to get contract extensions. And, you know, certainly if he's going to be going to be paid like a wide receiver, you know, you don't know with no cap increase, no $10 million increase in the cap, you know, what you're going to be able to have as far as that goes, and the cap could go down. It's going to be very hard for any of these players to get contract extensions. You know, yeah, if you're thinking it's a normal year and you can get a big bump, I just don't see it happening. And so, you know, what you're going to probably see is more guys get franchised, particularly if the cap stays level or goes down, because you can actually get them for a little bit less than what they got this year. So, like, for example, if you're the 49ers and you have a lot of issues right now with guys coming up in the secondary and other spots, I mean, you may just have to take the bad thing and just say, okay, we'll franchise you for $10.2 million as opposed to give you $17 and have cap problems for the future.
John, the 360 wants to know, have you ever given a team or an agent an analysis of a player's ability?
Yeah, I have. Yeah, and sometimes I'm right, sometimes I'm wrong. But, yeah, it's like, you know, you judge what you see, and, you know, that's the great part. You're talking to coaches and general managers, and I said, hey, by the way, did you notice this? Did you notice this? And sometimes you hit on it. But, yeah, I've done that. I mean,
right,
let's put this way. In fact, it involves one player that was in the news yesterday, Cam Newton.
I tried
to convince the Carolina Panthers that he would be a good choice. Guess what? He was.
Oh, I'm sorry that didn't work. Oh, wait. Yeah, that's right. Oh, I thought he was a Patriot.
He did get an MVP. And this is back in 2011.
Yeah. All right, Professor, we really appreciate it. Thanks, man. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Okay.
There he goes, John Clayton. If you missed any of the cold, hard facts brought to you by Frost Brewed Coors Light, you can download the podcast at 710sports.com. Okay, are we getting close here to having many of the major sports leagues returning to play? There are still some concerns, and we'll discuss where things are for the Major League Baseball, NFL. Right now, it seems kind of dire, doesn't it? I mean, we've been kind of negative about it. Can we talk positively about this? Maybe
with maybe me on the show?
Go down? Well, yeah, I guess not. Yeah, it's a good point. All right, well, we'll talk about that next. Shannon Dreher filling in for Bob Stelton today, and want to thank the professor, but we'll be right back at 710 ESPN Seattle. Bob, Dave, and more.
You're listening to Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio. Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
Great musical choice, DJ. Well done. Well done. Hey, if Bob Stelton was here, he'd say, remember, you now have radios in your home, smart speakers. Tell your smart speaker to play 710 ESPN Seattle or 710 AM. We got Shannon Dreher in today, Bob Stelton on vacation, Dave Wyman, Jim Moore, and we've been talking a lot about, I don't know, how are you guys feeling about sports leagues being able to play? Are you positive or negative? I feel like this is a very confusing thing. Now, I have a doctor friend of mine, and he said, man, the thing that is such a problem with COVID-19 is the asymptomatic people, the people that get it and can spread it, but they have no conditions whatsoever. They're like, as Paul put it the other day, they're not sick, right? And so that's what's so confusing about it, and it's scary, and I think human beings just are so afraid of the unknown, me included. But I do think that there is a lot of fear out there as well. Now, you might say rightfully so, but, you know, a lot of people will say, well, look, I mean, what is it, 0.4% in the state of Washington, I think, of COVID positive tests? And, you know, a lot of that because not a lot of people have been tested. And then of those people, 5% have died. So, and yeah, that's tragic. So it's just, you know, there's lots, it's hard to figure out where to get all of the information and, you know, to know what's the right thing to do. I mean, I don't know about you guys. I really feel bad. I'm fearful that I'm going to spread it to somebody. Like, I'm an asymptomatic, like, carrier of it. I fear that as much as I do, you know, contracting COVID-19, I feel like. 'Cause, you know, I'm fairly healthy. I don't have underlying, you know, conditions. But I do worry that, you know, if I'm not wearing my mask right or something, I feel like a responsibility. You guys ever get that sort of that feeling, that obligation, that you're afraid that either, I don't know how much you're going to get it or that you're going to actually spread it?
Well, yeah, it's both, Dave. You know, and Shannon, we'll get to you here in a second. But yeah, I feel, I mean, well, I'm 63, so I'm in that age bracket that, you know, if I get it, I mean, some serious things could go wrong with me. And so I think about that, but yeah, more than that, yeah, you don't want to spread it to anybody else. And especially I think about my mom, older people than me. I mean, my mom is 90, and we were over in Ellensburg watching our kids play baseball this over the weekend. And, you know, and her husband, Dick, is taking really good care of her and keeping distance from everyone. But yeah, you just worry about all different kinds of things, and you do the best you can with wearing the mask and having social distancing. And, you know, I know we're going to be talking about the NBA and Major League Baseball and the NFL and college football and whether they can get playing here soon. But, you know, just on a smaller level, this tournament, this round robin tournament we played in Ellensburg, it was really fun. We had a really good time, and there, you know, kids were wearing masks in the dugout, and the coaches were wearing masks. The umpires were keeping their distance for the most part. But Saturday night, we got an email saying from the tournament director saying, and we were planning on going back over there for the 4th of July, and they called it off because they want to take precautionary measures to make sure that, you know, nothing is brought into Ellensburg that would cause the spread of COVID-19. So it's such a fluid situation, and I'm sure that all these major commissioners are taking that into account too.
Shannon, you there? I think we lost Shannon there for a minute. Well, hey, in cut number six, Dan Patrick was talking about a trustworthy source that he has, says that NFL plans are in place to possibly start late.
I'll stand by what I was told, and my source is impeccable on this, that there are plans in place for the season to start later. Now, they're not going to make that public. And somebody's not appreciating that I'm making it public now. But they have to look at this and say, what if? Contingency plans. They're not going to say we have contingency plans, because the NFL just plows right through. But I just want everybody to understand where we are with the NFL.
That's really interesting. Dan Patrick talking about the NFL, that's big business there. And, you know, I don't know how they're going to handle it. And you want to talk about, like, social distancing. And, I mean, that game is the opposite of that, I think somebody said recently. I think it was Andrew Brandt, you know, as far as social distancing goes. And then, you know, I don't see how you could possibly put masks on. And I don't even know how effective they would be, you know. So I don't know about you guys. When I know on the plane a couple of times I got sort of out of breath, where I kind of had to move the mask. It's kind of uncomfortable. So, I mean, yeah, it's just, I feel like it's out there. And, you know, if we're just going to sit around and wait for a vaccine, I'm not sure if that's the move. I mean, and I wonder if there's going to be some legal things with the NFL. When we talked to Andrew Brandt about that, he said, you know, the waivers of people signing, you know, before they come in the stadium, if they do decide to have, you know, one quarter capacity or whatever. But I don't know. I just kind of assumed that the NFL season was going to go on. But then, you know, once these guys started opting out in Major League Baseball, I started to think about it from that standpoint, and whether or not everybody has their own risk level, right? So, you know, some people are going to think differently about that, and certainly younger people are going to think differently about that.
Yeah, you know, Dave, I mean, a lot of us are just trying to learn what's going on. And even, you know, the experts don't know everything there is to know about the spread of that disease.
Right.
And you sit there and you look at, like, I follow the PGA Tour, and if you can think of one sport where you think, okay, they'd be pretty much good to go with the social distancing that's built into golf, and yet they've had 4 to 6 players, I think it is now, that have tested positive, a couple of caddies. And so those kind of things just make you wonder about what it's going to be like when you have contact sports involved, like the NFL and the NBA. And Adam Silver in cut number 7, the NBA commissioner, he's got concerns about that bubble situation in Florida.
The level of concern has increased, not just because of the increased levels in Florida, but throughout the country. At least today, I believe 29 of the 50 states have an increased number of cases. Of course, we designed our campus in essence to isolate ourselves from whatever the level of cases was in the surrounding community. But since we placed our original, since we designed our initial protocol, we are continuing to work with Disney on the testing of at least a subset of their employees.
And I think that's the most important thing there, is the employees that come into the bubble. Because when you talk about what's happening in golf and what the biggest fear is, I know with baseball, they think they can control what happens at the park. What they can't control is what happens away from the park. I'm pretty sure those golfers didn't get it on the links. It was community spread wherever they were at, and they were probably out, or somebody they were with, even if it was a small circle, had been around someone. And that's what happens when an asymptomatic person can pass it on. It's next to impossible to safeguard against that unless you have a true bubble. And right now, no sport has a true bubble. And the NBA, at the very best, are going to try with a subset of the employees. They're putting all of this effort to get everybody into one place, make sure they're all safe. They have the testing. Yet, you know, the bus drivers who take them to the arenas are probably not going to be tested. Whoever cleans their room is probably not going to be tested. If you're going to do a bubble, it's not a bubble unless it's 100%. And when baseball first suggested it, and a lot of people said that would be impossible, my feeling was that in a short season, if you were to do 60 games in a bubble right now, and the biggest thing is players didn't want to be away from their families that long, I get it, but if you want to play, and if you want to have that paycheck, and if you want to do it safely, it has to be 100%. And the next thing people would say was, well, nobody's going to want to quarantine with them in that bubble. Sure they are. You know, there are people that need jobs in those areas right now. We go down to Arizona every year, and the stadiums down there are full of people who are working there and doing seasonal type work. And, you know, a lot are retired or just retired or a little bit older, and, you know, their kids are out of the house. Maybe they want to come live in the bubble for 3 months. Maybe it's college kids that aren't able to go to school right now who want to come into the bubble and live there. But what they are doing right now, there still are no guarantees, and it's going to come down to what happens either when the players are away from their venue, or if they're in a bubble and not allowed to leave that venue. It's whatever's brought into it.
Yeah. I guess I feel like the bubble thing, I just feel like the virus is out there and it's waiting, and I just feel like I'm not sure that you can control it. And as you mentioned, Shannon, you can't control people too. They're independently, you know, exercising their freedom and their will. And so, yeah, that's the other part. So, yeah, it's really scary, right? Like I said, you know, it's the unknown, and humans don't like that. And so, you know, we're in this tough situation right now. And I know a lot of people are probably thinking, well, it's just sports. And I know at least one Malcolm Jenkins was some contributor on a news source, and he was saying he thinks that the NFL is not it's a non-essential business. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see how this plays out. Well, coming up next, we're going to sweep the dial. And finally, we got a story in Sweep the Dial about someone farting. And it's been a long time coming, but we've got that in there. So stick around. It's Bob, Dave, and Moore.
Sweeping the dial. Streaming everywhere on the 710 Seattle Sports app and 710sports.com.
All right. I'm 56 years old. Jim's over 60. Is there something wrong? Did you laugh at that, Shannon? Is it still funny?
There is not enough room in the corner right now. Come on, guys, behave.
No, I'm just... That's the first time I'd heard that. I heard about it, but I hadn't heard it. And I'm usually not into that kind of humor, Shannon, and here I am laughing.
No,
like,
you're not.
Like I'm laughing like a little boy here.
Why am I not surprised?
How come we haven't heard this more in golfers? Because, like, you know, all the sports are a lot quieter now, right? Because there's no fans. But golf has always been quiet. And,
We're getting the microphones out on the course now, I think, is part of it. Sorry, Dave.
Yeah. No, okay. I got you. Yeah. So I actually have, this is from a long time ago, but I have a fart machine. It's like a speaker. And then there's a little, you can plant it somewhere. It's like a palm size. And you can go plant it wherever you want. And then there's a little remote control clicker. So you can play jokes on people. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I still think that's funny. But so Shannon doesn't, apparently.
That's an advancement in whoopee cushions then, huh?
Yeah, exactly. There you go. Yeah, I've always thought the whoopee cushion was great. But yeah, now it's electronic.
Shannon,
you get it from, I think you get it from Sharper Image. Is that still a store?
Might be. Shannon, you care to
not
comment?
Not sure the kids know what you're talking about.
Shannon, what did you think of Ian Poulter there? You got nothing?
No, I was watching the golf. I saw the deer come out of the woods. I thought maybe that's what you guys were going to talk about. No, you had to go somewhere else.
There's only one Hall of Famer coaching now, and that's Mike Munchak, I believe. I don't think there's another one. I mean, it was Dick LeBeau, but Dick, you know, got let go by on the next staff with Tennessee. I don't think there's anybody. I think if anything, it hurts me more so than my skin color, because you see a lot of DD coaches who are of color, running back coaches, position coaches. You do. I think that other position, that having that gold jacket and having that respect walk in the room. Sometimes other people don't want that in the room. They want one alpha in the room. And I'm not a real alpha where I want somebody's job. I just love talking ball. I think it's, well, because I know other Hall of Famers who want to coach. Ed Reed wants to coach. You know, he can't get a job. You know, people always want to say that we don't want to grind. But if I'm there at 6:30 in the morning and I don't leave until 10:30, is that not enough grind? I mean, you know, so I don't know what that means.
Yeah, there's Rod Woodson, believes NFL Hall of Famers are hindered in becoming coaches because the head coaches don't want another alpha in their way. I have a different theory. Yes, 6:30 to 10:30 is a grind, and that's pretty much what those coaches put in. I'll say this. I think if you're a good enough player to be in the Hall of Fame, that means you've made a lot of money. That means you're probably not going to go into coaching. Because, first of all, to get in the NFL, to coaching, you've got to start at the very bottom, man. You know, it is a grind. And so a lot of the players, I mean, I know this, I never won it. I thought about it for a little while, but I coached high school football and loved it. But my gosh, I put a lot of time into that. But, you know, I just thought, I talked to one of my old coaches one time, and he said that he had not seen his kids awake for like 6 days. Because his commute, he had to get up early, he had to get home late, and that's why, I mean, if you're good enough to be a Hall of Famer, you've made a lot of money, and why would you go into coaching? Because, again, you have to start at, like, the lower level. I remember Chuck Knox told Jim Zorn that. He's like, I want to get into coaching. He's like, all right, well, go coach high school, and then maybe go to a community college, and then maybe go to a college, and then maybe you can get a job as, like, an assistant in the NFL. You don't just go right in. And just because you're a really good football player, that doesn't mean you're a really good coach. The other thing I would say about that is that a lot of really good players aren't good coaches. And the reason why? Because they just went out and did it. They couldn't explain it. I mean, that's where a lot of the backup quarterbacks in the league are. I mentioned them earlier, five or six of them that are, you know, they're coaches now because, you know, they couldn't do it, but they learned it and they could absorb it. So, yeah, that's my alternate theory to what Rod Woodson had to say there.
Yeah, well, that's two sides of it. But you bring up the kids, and I think people are finding out, no matter what the profession is, but coaching, certainly all the hours they put in, and they're finding, boy, I can, you know, get some work in here at home and still see the family. And so that's been something good that has come out of this. But, yeah, I don't know. I can't imagine being a coach, a head coach, and being so insecure that I wouldn't want to have a Hall of Famer in my coaching room to help me out. But Rod Woodson apparently seems to think that's the case.
Seems to be less a problem in baseball. I think you see it quite a bit more. Paul Molitor was a hitting coach with the Mariners. Edgar, I guess that was before he went into the Hall of Fame, but he was a Hall of Famer, no question about it. Ricky Henderson has done so much with the A's. Tony Gwynn coached in college. I think that you've got to I think it's probably a little different in baseball because the careers are so much longer and there's so much more used to that grind, and when they come to a stop, they're really kind of looking at, now what do I do? And if they really have that love for the game, coaching seems to be still something that they're interested in.
Today, I'm tipping my hat to everybody in the Negro Leagues who left a century-long legacy of talent and spirit and dignity on our country. So here's to Satchel Paige, Josh Gibson, Cool Papa Bell, and everybody else, including three brave women who did us all proud. There were some great team names too, like the Chicago American Giants. Couldn't think of a more fitting label for everyone who suited up. Congratulations, everybody.
Yep, there's Barack Obama. Boy, he can speak. That was really well said. I like that. And Shannon, have you been? I've not been to the Negro Baseball Hall of Fame in Kansas City, and that's something that I've always wanted to do. And I haven't been to Kansas City in a long time. And I understand that's like one of the better museums that you can go through.
Every single trip we have made there, I have gone to the museum. And that's going all the way back to 2003. And often it's with young players that are with the Mariners. And a couple of times it's been on my own. Kevin Kremen, former producer, engineer extraordinaire, grabbed me on the first trip and said, you must go. And I just can't thank him enough for it. It's a very small museum, but it's just jam-packed with just eye-opening artifacts and news articles and just displays and setups and baseballs that have been signed. I think Geddy Lee of Rush actually donated the most baseballs. He's a huge collector of the Negro League baseballs and the autographs. And then in the middle of it is the centerpiece. It is the Field of Dreams, and there are bronze statues of a lot of the players that Barack Obama just mentioned right there. And if you close your eyes, you can kind of, the imagination kind of runs away. The lighting is a little bit dimmed, and the spotlight are on these statues. And there's a chicken wire fence, and the manager of the team is Buck O'Neill. And he's on the outside of the chicken wire, not inside in the diamond. And because it was, he always felt he was on the outside looking in. And one of my greatest hopes is that he gets into the Hall of Fame soon. He absolutely deserves to be there, but it is a treasure. Kansas City is a great baseball town. It's one of the ones at the top of my list when people say, where should I go? You know, a summer game in Kansas City, a trip to the Negro Leagues Museum, the Jazz Museum is right next door, and barbecue, of course, is quite good too. But the history is amazing, and when I'm asked if there is any moment I could go back to in baseball history and view it, it would be either a Negro Leagues All-Star game or a Sunday afternoon game there. The stories, they would get dressed up in their absolute Sunday finery, and the stories that are told and have been passed down, it just seems like it would have been the most incredible baseball experience. The history is rich. It was sadly necessary. The good news was when Jackie Robinson, you know, crossed the color barrier, that was great because we were finally integrating baseball, but that also meant the end of the Negro Leagues. So kind of a bittersweet, correct in what it should be, but really, really an important part of baseball history.
Well, and I'm guessing, Shannon, that Satchel Paige must have been featured prominently or is featured prominently in that museum. I'm looking at his Wikipedia page right now. It's incredible how long his career was in the Negro Leagues, and then he played Major League Baseball, too. He was a two-time All-Star. And then he made an appearance with the Kansas City Athletics in 1965, and it must have been at the age of 57 or 58.
He played in every decade of his life, I think, from the teens through 60.
Wow. That's amazing. Well, I'll definitely have to check that out next time I get to Kansas City, when the Seahawks play the AFC West, I guess. But all right, coming up next, we have a special guest. Oh, wait, she's been on the show the whole day. It's Shannon Dreyer. And we're going to take phone calls. Is that right, DJ?
And text.
Yeah.
Questions for Shannon.
And text. Yeah, the 12th caller gets to get – no, I'm just kidding, DJ. Just kidding. I wouldn't do that to you. But we're going to ask Shannon a lot more questions because we left a lot of meat on the bone that first half hour that we were talking to Shannon about certainly the players especially. And, Shannon, you've been writing something called Get to Know Your Mariners, and I want to hear about some of the guys. That's really what I'm interested in anyway, but also can talk about the rosters and the 60-game season. That's coming up next on Bob, Dave, and More with Shannon Dreyer, checking in as a host and our special guest.